So today's daf is Lamed Chet. We're going to start at Lamed Zayin Amabed at the bottom, two lines from the bottom. Amrei Naharda. Yesterday we were talking about trees and the land underneath the tree. So Amrei Naharda. Haiman dezeben dikla lechavre, kanele mishipule ad tahoma. Somebody who buys a tree from his friend, buys from the bottom of the tree, from under the tree, all the way down to the depths. Basically from there, you know, until you get to China. Okay, so now there's a whole debate. There's a bit of a issue here about this statement of Naharadah, okay, because in the Mishnah on Pei Aleph, okay, if you want to turn for a minute, I don't know if you have Pei, you probably don't have Pei Aleph in that version of Yad Lashanshtin, but I'll read it to you. In the Mishnah in Pei Aleph, it says, HaKonesh Shnei Ilanot B'toch Sadeh Chavero, Hare Zeh Lo Kana Karka. Okay, so according to this, if you buy two trees, you don't acquire the karka. Okay, Rabbi Meir Omer Kana Karka. Fine, he disagrees. But the assumption is here that the halacha is like Tanakama, that you do not kone the karka. And then it says, Ve'im metu en lo karka. Okay, and then, fine. So now, and if the tree dies, he doesn't get the land underneath it. That's what the Mishnah says. So the Mishnah says, you buy a tree, you don't get the land underneath, and if the tree is to die, you don't get the land, meaning you can't rebuild, you can't plant another tree. But Naharda, what they seem to be saying, somewhat contradicts, and there's going to be a debate about how exactly this halacha matches with the Mishnah. So here, what does Naharda say? They say someone who buys a tree from his friend, which sounds just like the Mishnah there, he buys from under the tree all the way down to the depths. So how does that work with the Mishnah? So the Rashbam says that what we're talking about here is that exactly sort of against the Mishnah there, okay, is that if it dries up, he acquires the place and he can then plant a new tree. That's the relevance. And Tosfot says, how could you possibly say that? Because the Mishnah contradicts that halacha. And therefore, Tosfot has a different explanation and says that what we need here is not the person who bought the tree in terms of can he, if the tree dies, can he build a new tree? Because that seems clear from the plant a new tree, thank you. It seems clear he can't. So what does it mean? It means that the seller who owns the land can't dig underneath the tree. He can't use, while the tree is still there, he's not allowed to do anything with the land underneath the tree. He can't start digging underneath for whatever reason if he needs it. So even very deep down, right? So that's what he's not allowed. The Rimi Gash says that the owner can't force, yes, once the tree dies, you can't replant. However, while the tree is still alive, the owner of the karka can't insist that the person uproot his tree and take it somewhere else and leave him with the land. That's what it means that he owns the land. He doesn't really own the land, but it means that no one can kick him off the land. We saw that yesterday, right? That if he doesn't get the karka, then the owner can just say to him, take your tree and get out of here.
I'm wondering how that worked, because you're not supposed to uproot fruit trees. I mean, the whole issue about
fruit trees. There's an issue about uprooting fruit trees. That's true. Although I think if you're going to replant them, it's not such an issue. Okay. So I think you could say that you're going to do it for replanting purposes. And then there's one last one I wanted to bring in, the Ramban. He says that if the tree dies, you may not be able to plant a new tree. However, you can compare this to the giving tree, right? What happens in the giving tree at the end? The tree at least it provides a stump. So here it's even one step further than the giving tree. It's saying you can at least sit on the space where your tree once was. So giving tree image gets it into your head. Okay. So now, that was Nahardah's statement. They say you buy a tree, you get the ground underneath all the way out of Tahom. Mat kifla Rava. Rava says, wait a minute. V'le male korkama derishka zvinalach. Akor korkim adirishcha vizil. Why do you think that that's the case, that he gets the land underneath? Can't the owner just say to him, I sold you a saffron crocus, which is the kind of thing that basically you sell to someone and they just take out of the ground right away. And therefore you can say to him, take your saffron crocus and get out of here. So Amar Rava, Rava says, I'll agree with what you said in Naharda only in a particular case. What's the case? Biba machma ta'ana. Okay, in a case where he says that he claims that you, okay, in a regular typical case, Rava says, if someone buys a tree, we go like the Mishnah, that he doesn't get the karka, and the owner can actually insist, right? We go all the way to that extreme. Not only can he not rebuild, replant, but the owner can insist that he take his tree and leave. But in the case of where somebody claims, I've been using this tree for 3 years, and I had a shtar that said, this is Bamach Matana, I had a shtar that said that you sold me the tree, and you sold me the ground underneath. In other words, basic cases, you didn't buy the ground underneath, if you didn't say anything otherwise. But if the person specifically stated in the shtar that he sold you the tree and the ground underneath, and now you claim, well, 3 years have passed, I didn't keep my shtar anymore, and therefore, in that case, I would agree with what Naharda says, that he gets Mishipule Ad Tehom. Then he gets the land. But I don't agree with you in a regular case. Amalei Markashisha Bered Rav Chista L'Rav Ashi. So now Markashisha, the son of Rav Chista, asked Rav Ashi, which was the same question that Rav Ashi asked Rav Kahana on Lamed Hay, I believe it was, a few dapim ago. You'll remember as soon as we see it. And now it's interesting that they asked Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi answers the same answer that Rav Kahana gave him there. E korkam adirish chazavin le, my havale lemayabad. If he had sold him a korkam adirishka, and so what could the owner have done? In other words, how could he, if he actually did sell him a korkam adirishka, and now 3 years have passed and he claims, well, I own this, right? So what could the owner have done? So now they say, oh, he bai le lemchuye. He should have protested in the meanwhile. And the fact that 3 years have passed and he didn't protest, that proves that. He, right? In other words, this is the same thing that the owner had to protest. It's not like the owner's left with nothing. No, the owner has to protest. And how do we know this? You'll remember this in a second. Dilo te mahachi, hane mashkanta desura, dekate behachi. In the mashkanta desura, where we write in the shtar mashkanta, bimishlam shanya elin, in the end of these years, tipuk arada below kesef, this land will go back to you without you having to pay me any money because I've been eating the fruits of the land against the loan that you took out. Right? So now, if the guy, right, imagine it takes 5 years, like we gave the example last time, and if he hides the shtar after the 5 years and claims, I own this, so he basically, it will be believed. So what's the protection for the lova in this whole thing? Would the rabbis have instituted takana of this mashkanta desura, where in the end, it was to help the lova, that he could take a mashkon against the, right, without making it rebeat. So how could, that he could give a mashkon, right? How could the rabbis have been mitakein this takana that would cause the lova to eventually lose his land because the owner could play games, the malve, the lender could play games with him? Ela, so what do we say there? It must be the ibai lelemchuye, hachanami ibai lelemchuye. So just like there, he has to protest. In other words, the lova has to know, and at the very end of today's daf, we'll get to what do you have to say exactly to protest. Okay, we haven't discussed this yet. What is the nusach? Is there a set text that you have to say when you protest? So now we say, if someone is living on your land for whatever reason that you gave him rights to certain things in the land, well then you have to, right, if he tries to, right, you have to basically establish what the situation is and protest and say, you know, this land doesn't belong to you. Okay. New mission. Shalosh aratzot l'chazaka. Okay, here are sheets for today. Sheets. Shalosh aratzot l'chazaka. Yehuda, ve'eber ha-yardein v'ha-galil. There are three lands for chazaka purposes. What does this mean? This means, in a minute we'll see, there's three areas of Eretz Israel that are separated from each other, which means that if one person's living in a particular area, then he's not allowed, and then he can't create a chazaka on land that he has somewhere else. Okay, if there's a there's a separation of the owner from his land, then he's not going to be able to have a chazaka. What does this mean? So Yehuda be'ever ha-yardein v'ha-galil. So haya be'Yehuda ve'chzik be'galil. If he was living in Yehuda and somebody created a chazaka on his land that was in the Galil, the assumption is what? There's no travel between the two places, right? Which is an interesting assumption because it doesn't seem to us so terribly far nowadays, but we'll talk about it soon, why it's considered so far. So if I'm living in Yehuda, I have land in the Galil, and someone's been living in my land for 3 years and I didn't protest, he cannot create a chazaka because the assumption is, right, I can't get there, I wouldn't necessarily get there, or I can't get word there. Okay, we'll talk about what exactly. By the way, I want to just review about protesting, because today we're going to talk a lot about protesting, and there's really two purposes to the protest. Okay, the protest works in two ways. Number one, it's for the owner of the property, right, that we need to know. The owner of the property has to say that this is my property, to claim rights of ownership over it, over someone who's actually living there. And the other issue is for the possessor. The possessor has to hear about the protest, because why? Because remember, he can throw out his shtar after 3 years. However, if someone's protesting, then he better keep his shtar, because he knows that he's going to need it to prove. Right? Like we talked about the other day, if you're in the middle of an audit and the 7 years are up, so you're not going to throw out all your documentation before 7 years, because you know you're in the middle of an audit and they're going to want your old documents. It's the same thing here. Well, we don't assume after 3 years someone will necessarily keep their shtar, but in the event that someone's protesting and there's an issue, well, then you better hold on to your shtar, and if you don't, well, then it's your fault. So there's two aspects of it which are going to come up in various ways. So now, interestingly enough, they talk about Yehuda, Eber HaYarden, and the Galil, but all the examples are going to be just with Galil and Yehuda, but obviously it would be the same with Eber HaYarden. They're just bringing examples. So he was Hayab Yehuda v'chzik b'Galil, or b'Galil. He was living in the Galil, v'chzik b'Yehuda, and someone took possession of his property in Yehuda. Eina chazaka ad sheyehei imo b'medina achat. It's not considered a chazaka unless they're living in the same Medina. These were clearly called different Medino, different states, right? There's Yehuda, there's the Galil, and there's Eber HaYarden. So you have to have been living in the same Medina in order for the whole issue of protesting to come about. Okay? And if not, then we can assume that there was no protest for a different reason, and therefore the whole laws of chazakah are thrown out the window, and you cannot assume chazakah after 3 years.
What period are we talking about here?
What time period? So this is the Mishnah. This is during from 0 to 200. Okay? Obviously, in the Gemara, they would be talking about different areas, different territories. But they actually don't relate to this, but they're talking about this. So now, by the way, there's a comparison to Gittin. We learned about Gittin also, about these two areas, Yehuda and the Galil. And there, I think, there was an issue. Because there, if the get is brought from Chutz Laaretz, you have to say Fanei Nechtam, but if it was brought from Yehuda to Galil, you don't, because the issue was about Eidim Mitzuyin. So why is that not the same here? So there they say, because the woman wants to prove her get, she'll go and find the witnesses, even though it's hard to get there. Whereas here, it's a matter of, did someone even hear about it? Or it's a different kind of situation. There, she can be proactive about it. In this case, that issue isn't so relevant. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda comes and says now, Lo amru shalosh shanim ela kedei sheyehe baspamya v'yachzik shana. I think they changed the nusach. V'yelchu v'yodiuhu shana v'yavo l'shana acheret. By the way, this sounds a little, if you remember, the story of Hordus when the guy tells him go to the Romans. Right, go build the Beit HaMikdash and then send the messengers. It'll take them a year to get there. It'll take them a year to tell the king, and then by the time they come back, it'll be another year. By that time, you'll have redone the Beit HaMikdash. And then you won't have an issue. Obviously, he did have an issue, because then they got angry that he did it without getting their approval. But here it's the same type thing. Rabbi Yehuda says this. The reason they say Shalosh Shanim is why? So that he could be Ba'aspamia. Aspamia, most people say it means Spain. Okay, so we're talking about where, even if he's, let's say it like this, right? Where's Spain? It's the farthest point in Europe, or one of the far points in Europe. It's as if you go the farthest point possible. That was as far as they could imagine, right? That would take him a year. Then he would be Yachzik, right? So he would live there for a year. Yachuvi Odi'u Shana. So they would find out he was there. They would go and tell the owner who was living in Aspamia. That would take them a year. And then V'yavol L'shana Acheret, and they'll come back in the third year and protest. And after that, so if that hasn't happened, right, it's a 3-year cycle that would take for the longest possible place. Okay, there's a big debate about how to view Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. Are they arguing? Rabbi Chai Gaon says that Rabbi Yehuda actually isn't arguing at all. And that Tanakhama, we're going to see in the Gemara in a minute, that they say that Tanakhama is actually talking about the Yehuda and Galil is relating to a shot mashber, like a crisis, where people can't travel from one to the other. And it has nothing to do with the distance. It's a matter of the roads are dangerous, right? They have to pass through. Right? You can imagine, like today, to get to some places, you might have to go through dangerous areas, Right? Same between Yehuda and Galil, right? We still have the same issues that went on then. And it was dangerous to travel, and that's why people didn't travel. But the Rabbi Yehuda is talking about in a place where there's no danger to travel, and that they're talking about two totally different things, and they're not actually arguing. That's Rav Haigo and Shita. The Rambam says, or the Rashbam also, and others, that we can, if we assume that he's arguing with Tanakama, then we can assume two things that come out of Rabbi Yehuda. One is that in a time of crisis, he thinks you can establish a chazaka. He disagrees with Tanakama, because we're going to see again that Tanakama, we assume, is a time of crisis. And he thinks that that's not an issue. And the other thing is that, according to him, if you're nearby, you can establish a chazaka immediately. Right? You follow? And as he thinks that the reason for chazaka is just in case the owner's living really far away. Which means if the owner hears and doesn't protest, according to Rabbi Yehuda, immediately it would be a chazaka. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, he basically has a whole different approach to chazaka than we, according to this reading, than we saw earlier. Because what did we see earlier? The whole thing is that people won't keep their documents for 3 years. Remember, we had a whole question, and there were a few different opinions. Right, there were a few different opinions about why this chazkat shalosh shanim, and this would be a whole different answer to that question of why do we have chazkat shalosh shanim? It's because, right, it sounds very similar to what? To Mashiva Ruach Marita Geshem, right? V'tein talu matar levracha. When do we start saying it? As soon as the farthest people that they could imagine would get home from the Aliyah LaRegel and come back. So it's the same concept here that we're basically saying, we're basing it on, now there, what's interesting, right? So maybe you would say it would be the same thing here. There were kovea for everybody, they only start saying it later because of that. So maybe you would say, maybe you wouldn't necessarily assume that then Rabbi Yehuda would say, if you hear and you don't protest, well, then you would have an immediate chazaka. And that's a question, whether he would say, lo plug, we're going to just make it halacha across the board because of the farthest person possible. So we're just going to say this is across the board. But others actually say, no, you can infer from him that according to his opinion, you could actually create a chazaka immediately if the owner saw it, didn't protest. You can prove the owner saw it, didn't say anything. There's your chazaka. Okay, so there's many different ways of understanding. Are they arguing at all? If they are arguing, how far can you take Rabbi Yehuda's shita? Again, we don't paskin like him, but it's interesting to see that he actually has a shita like that. Okay, my kasavar Tanakama. So now we're going to question Tanakama, and like I said, we're going to get to the conclusion. I already told you the conclusion that we're going to say that Tanakama holds that it's only in a crisis situation. Why? Here we're going to see why. E kasavar macha'a shelo b'fanav havi macha'a afilu Yehuda v'galil nami. If it's because we hold that a mecha'a shelo b'fanav is a mecha'a, right? The protester, remember, the possessor doesn't necessarily have to be told directly about it. Okay, the owner can protest to his next door neighbor, and that's sufficient. Okay, we're going to talk tomorrow about in front of how many people do you have to protest? Is it two? Is it three? Okay, we'll see. That gets to other issues we saw actually in Gittin also. If you say in front of two, it's not always clear. They're actually going to relate it to this halacha of Lashon Hara. If you know when somebody says something in front of three people, you can then tell it to anybody you want. It's not Lashon Hara because the assumption is if someone told to three people,
it's not a secret.
Word is going to get around. It's not a secret, whereas two might be. So we're going to see here, the machloket about here, whether it's two or three.
Why does the owner have to protest personally? Why can't he assign a shaliach? I mean, like, if you own property far away...
The point is, he doesn't even have to... The point is here, if you say macha'a shalo b'fanav is macha'a, then he doesn't even have to tell the person directly. He can just say to anybody, he doesn't even need to send a shaliach. Because the assumption is that word gets around. It's very similar to the get thing about bitul shalo b'fanav, right? Do you have to be mevatel the get in front of the woman? And there, if you recall, Mi'ikar Adin, he doesn't have to be mevatel to get in front of the woman. Because if he goes to a Beit Din, or he goes to two people, or maybe three people, there was a homochloket, is it two, is it three, then that's sufficient. However, Rabban Gamliel was mitaken, this takanah, mishum tikkun olam, that's how we got into all the tikkun olams there, because of the concern that what would happen, she wouldn't hear, she would get remarried. Right? This is all about bitul get, not giving the get, but canceling a get. Right? If he sends the get with a shaliach and then wants to cancel it, so he can cancel it in front of two people if he wants, or three people, depending on the machloket. But Rabban Gamliel said, wait a minute, you can't do that. The woman's never going to hear. But mi'ikar adin, it's fine. So this is similar. Right? Do you even have to send a shaliach? Sounds like you don't. Okay, so if you hold macha'a shelo b'fanav is macha'a, then it shouldn't matter afilu Yehuda v'Galil nami. Well, then, if you're living in Yehuda and your land's in the Galil, so you can just sit in Yehuda and say, hey, I protest the person living on my land in the Galil, and it doesn't matter, because macha'a shelo b'fanav is macha'a. And I kasavar macha'a shelo b'fanav lo havya macha'a. If Rav's logic is that macha'a shelo b'fanav is not macha'a, then afilu Yehuda v'Yehuda nami lo. Then even within the, what did the Mishnah say? Ad shehei mo b'midina achat. But b'midina achat won't help you. Just because you live in the same country, doesn't, or state, let's call it, doesn't mean that the person's going to necessarily know. If it has to be b'fanav, it has to be b'fanav. And maybe Shari was suggesting you could send a shaliach according to this. Okay, maybe you could send a shaliach, but there has to be a shaliach who tells him. In other words, he has to hear directly. And therefore, Yehuda, Galil, that whole thing is irrelevant. In other words, if Rav is holding one or the other, no matter which one he's holding, they're trying to figure out what's the logic behind Rav's Shita, Tanakama's Shita here. Okay, because we're saying, sorry, I don't know why I said Rav. Rav is next. But what's behind Tanakama's Shita here? Is Tanakama holding, they're assuming, since these places are far away, it must have to do with this issue of Macha'a Shelo B'fanav. So then what are the answer? Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mama Lama Rav, La'olam kasavar Macha'a Shelo B'fanav havya Macha'a. It must be that they hold that a Macha'a Shelo B'fanav is Macha'a. That's what Tanakama holds. It's okay. But Mishnatenu, why is this issue Yehuda and Galil? B'shat Chirum Shanu. Even though we generally hold that a Macha'a Shelo B'fanav would work, it won't work if there's a Shat Chirum, emergency situation, meaning nobody can get from one to the other. Now, remember, why does it work Macha'a Shelo B'fanav? We learned this before, because word gets spread. But word doesn't get spread if these places are totally secluded, isolated from each other, and there's no way to travel between the locations. Again, this is another one of those sugyas that nowadays would be a totally irrelevant sugya. But unless maybe you can think of some place where it's relevant, but it's hard to imagine that there would be much relevance because we can get information anywhere nowadays. Okay. So then they say, Umayshna Yehuda v'Galil dinakit. If the whole issue is Shat Chirum, so why they say Yehuda v'Galil? They should have just said in the Mishnah, Shat Chirum. So, Hakamashmana, what does it teach you? It's an interesting issue. Distam Yehuda v'Galil k'Shat Chirum dami. The assumption is that Yehuda and Galil is always considered Shat Chirum. It's always dangerous to get from one to the other. There aren't Shayarot that are going back and forth. Okay, whether this is historically accurate, I'm not sure. Okay, the Rashbam says, Afilu b'shat shalom. In other words, even when there's peace, still, these two places live entirely isolated. And also the Yever HaYarden, right? Interesting, like I said, they don't even mention the Yever HaYarden here. So anyway, it's interesting to see that they view Yehuda and Galil as always considered Shat Chirum. There's always, you know, people living in between that mess up the roads and injure people and knock down the caravans, etc. And basically because of that, throw rocks, okay? Therefore, it's always considered Shat Chirum, and that's why that was the Mishnah the Tanakhama put. Now, you have to remember, I always like to say this, when we look at a Mishnah that's explained a little bit out of the Pshat, so the Pshat is that we're talking about Yehuda and Galil and Eber HaYarden and that they're considered separate areas. Maybe someone open that. So, according to the Pshat of the Mishnah, there's Eber HaYarden, there's the Galil, and there's Yehuda, which sound like these areas, there's less travel going on, etc. But in the end, the Gemara concludes that the issue must be Shat Chirum. And that Yehuda and Galil are always Shat Chirum, but it's not necessarily clear that that's what the Gemara, that's what the Mishnah meant originally. Okay, starting from the top of Lamech Chet Amud Bet at the two dots. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Ein machzikim b'nechzei boreach. Here's a very interesting case. Somebody runs away, they skip town, and somebody else decides to live in their property. So now, what's going to be the halacha? The guy skipped town because of whatever reason he was running away. We'll talk at the very end of the sugya about maybe there's two different reasons to why people run away. Maybe I'll already kind of give it away a little bit, but there's people who run away because someone's after them for money. And there's other reasons why people run away is because Either. Okay, now there's going to be two, but the two I think can break up into more than two. They say because of margin, which means he's running away from murder. Okay, either you could say, we've seen all those sugyas about the non-Jewish scary people, right, that are after people, and you know, and maybe they did something against a non-Jew who now wants to kill them. Or it could be that they killed someone and they're running away for their lives to avoid getting killed by the relatives. So people run. Somebody runs away, and somebody takes over their property. So now, do we say, what's the issue? Remember, why do we protest? Right, one, you need the owner to protest. You're living in my property, and two, you need the possessor to hear about it. Now, in this case, what's the issue? So the person whose property it is gone, right? And he doesn't want to, right, so he doesn't want to issue a protest, because if he issues a protest, what's going to happen? People will find him. Exactly. So he's worried about being found. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Ein machzikim nechzei borech. You can follow on the chart, and you'll see that there's going to be two opposite nuschaot of what happens here. We're going to see the same sugya like a mirror image. The first time, we're going to say the Rav says, Ein machzikim nechzei borech. The second time, it's going to be machzikim nechzei borech. So right now, we're going to follow the first one. Now, Rav Yehuda was a student of Rav and Shmuel's. What happened? He was really a student of Rav's. When Rav died, he became a student of Shmuel's. Often in the Gemara, they say, you'll see this phrase, Ki amarita kamei de Shmuel, which means, after Rav died, I went to learn with Shmuel, and Shmuel told me this. Amar li, v'chi limchot befanavu tzarich? Wait a minute. If emach zekim benichsei boreach, what must be the issue? Why did Rav say emachzikim b'nichsei boreach? Because you have to be mocheh b'fanav, and he can't be mocheh b'fanav because he's a wanted man, and he can't go back and protest in front of him. So if that's the case, what's Rav teaching us? V'Rav, my kamash malan, mecha'a shelo b'fanav, havya mecha'a. Right? So then what will it come out that he's teaching? Lo havya mecha'a, sorry. Then mecha'a shelo b'fanav is not a mecha'a. Now, how can he possibly be saying that, Rav? Because what did Rav say earlier today? Okay, that's why I charted out. You can see. Look at the top part of your sheet. Rav Abba Bar Mama said in the name of Rav about the Mishnah, the Tanakhama is sover what? The Mecha'a Shalom B'Fanav Havya Mecha'a, right? So, Ha Amar Rav, Mecha'a Shalom B'Fanav Havya Mecha'a, which means that Rav would contradict himself. If Rav here is saying you can't be Machzik B'Nechse Boreach, he basically holds, because you have to protest in front of the person. And earlier, when he was explaining the Mishnah, what did he say? The Tanakhama holds, Mecha'a Shalom B'Fanav is Mecha'a, and that's why he had to explain that the Mishnah was Shachirim. So what do we answer? Don't ask a question from Rav who explained our Mishnah, because when he explained the Mishnah, he wasn't talking about his own Shita. Rav Tama Detana Didan Kamefarish Velelo Sfirale. He was only coming to explain the Tanakhama's opinion. It wasn't that that's what he holds. It was just his explanation to understand Tanakhama. So that's the first way of reading the sugya. Ika da Amre, second way of reading the sugya, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Machzikim Benichse Borech, you can be Machzik Benichse Borech, okay? If somebody runs away and you live in their property 3 years, you can prove ownership over the land. Ki Amarita Kamei de Shmuel, again, it's going to be the exact same, like I said, a mirror image. When Rav Yehuda came and said this in front of Shmuel, Amar Li, Shmuel said to me, Pshita, why did Rav even bother to say this? It's totally obvious. V'chilim chop efanavu tzarich? Does he need to protest in front of him? Of course, if a boreach runs away, of course he can lodge a protest, because he can just lodge a protest where he is and assume that word will get to the other person. So therefore, it's just part of the same basic halachot of mecha'a shelo b'fanav is a mecha'a, which Rav said earlier. So v'rav my kamash malam, mecha'a shelo b'fanav havi mecha'a, v'ha amarav chadazimna. If that's what Rav is coming to teach us, Rav already said it somewhere else. We always have these, right? Sometimes people teach things, and if they taught it in some other way and you can infer it, they say, well, why'd you bother saying it twice? It would have been obvious, even though we all know that oftentimes people say things in other contexts, and it's just a way of teaching it, and it doesn't mean that you can't do that. But that's the Gemara's type of question. So what do they answer? Anyway, the Gemara has a better answer. Elaha kamashvan, by Rav telling us this, what is he trying to say? Da'afi, he's actually getting to something totally different. Again, this is a little off the pshat. Da'afilu micha b'fnei shnayim, she'en yicholin lomar lo, havya mecha'a. That even if he protests in front of two people who can't get back to tell that person, okay, we'll talk about in a minute why they can't, it's still a mecha'a. meaning that if the owner runs away, okay, he's on the run, and the only two people he finds are people, okay, I'll give you a bunch of examples that the Mefarshim gave. Either they're lame, or they're blind, or they're old, or they're leaving town, and there's no way they're going to be able to bring the protest back to the original person. Rav says, despite that, it's still a mechah. Okay, by the way, you see here, I told you there's going to be a machloket about bifnei how many people. Here it says bifnei shnayim. So here it seems clear he holds it's in front of two. Now, how do we know that Rav, that it makes sense that this is what Rav would say, and it would go against, and Shmuel was surprised by this? Because de'amar Rav Anan says, l'didi mefarshe le'minei demar Shmuel, I understood from Rav Shmuel, it was explained to me in the name of Shmuel, that micha bifnei shnei b'nei adam she'cholin lomar lo, havi mecha'a. But micha bifnei shnei b'nei adam she'ein yecholin lomar lo, lo havi mecha'a. Shmuel dafka holds against this statement of Rav, and Shmuel holds that if you protest in front of two people who can't actually deliver the message, then it's not a mecha'a. V'Rav, so then what will Rav hold? Why does Rav think that it's a good mecha'a? Because chavercha chavri ile, v'chaver de chavercha chavri ile. This is all a matter of how fast your rumors get spread, right? Can you assume that if you tell a random person, right, word will get there. But what if you tell someone who can't deliver the message themselves? So will word still get around? Again, it obviously depends on if they're lame, if they're blind, right, what their issue is. If you're just talking about two people who are going out of town, well, they have enough time to basically tell someone else who's going to tell someone else, right? How this is all a question of how quickly rumors get spread and how rumors get spread. You could even find a lame person who could somehow get a message across to someone to get the word out there that someone is sitting on someone else's land, and eventually word will get back to him. I wanted to just bring up the Yerushalmi brings an interesting proof to say here. Maybe we'll just go on one more minute and then we'll stop and go to what they say. But anyway, Amar Rav. Let's do it before because it's not Rav. It matches the second Nusach here. The Yerushalmi brings a proof, interestingly, from Sefer Melachim to show that you can be machzik b'nichzei boreach. I don't know if anyone will remember this, that we talked about this. It's not something you would necessarily remember, but the Isha Shunamit, remember the woman who Elisha revives his son? So, her son? So, what happens here? So, Elisha talks to the woman, Asher Chiyapina, Lemor Kumi Lechi Atub Obetech, Bigui Basher Taguri, Kikarasham Lara, Begambala Arat Sheva Shanim. Batakam Isha, so what happens? There's a famine, and she doesn't have a lot of money, right? So she leaves, and she goes, Vataka Eretz Plishtim, Sheva Shanim. She lives in Plishtim for 7 years. What obviously happens when she gets back? Vahi Mikse Sheva Shanim, you can guess based on the context. Vatasha Vaisham Eretz Plishtim, Vatetze Litzok El Melech, El Beita Ve'el Sada. She goes to the king and starts complaining. My house, someone's living in it. My field, someone took over my field. So now, what does the Yerushalmi infer from there? The fact that she has to go to the king means that someone was actually machzik in her land and that you can be machzik b'nichzei boreach. She was considered a boreach, right? Actually, not for the reasons that someone was chasing her for money, not for the reason someone wanted to kill her, because she needed for financial reasons. So basically, the Yerushalmi proves from there that you can see from the Torah, from the Nevi'im, that machzikim b'nichzei boreach. Obviously, it's all a question whether you learn halacha from stories in the books of Nevi'im, but it was an interesting proof, I thought. So Amar Rava, Hilchata, Ein Machzikim B'Nechzei Boreach, U'Mecha'a Shelo B'Fanav Havi Mecha'a. So Rava now says the halacha is like this. You can't be Machzik B'Nechzei Boreach, and Mecha'a Shelo B'Fanav Havi Mecha'a. So the Gemara immediately asks, wait a minute, Tarte, you're saying two contradictory things. If we say Ein Machzikim B'Nechzei Boreach, it's because there's no way to protest in the way that the person will hear, and therefore mecha'a shelo b'fanav is mecha'a. You'd have to say the mecha'a shelo b'fanav is not mecha'a, and that's why I'm machzikim. So how can you possibly say this? So what are the answer? Lo kashya. Kam boreach machmat mamon ve'kam boreach machmat mardin. There's two ways why people run away, some for money and some for their lives. And now there's going to be two different interpretations about why, if someone is running for their lives, are we going to say, in that case, ein machzikin, okay? But in a case where someone's running away for money purposes, we'll say, then you can be machzik, because mecha'a shelo b'fanav is a mecha'a. So what's the issue with the money? The money is, right, so you're running away from money, but you're not as scared if somebody catches you. Because, okay, so now you could say why, you're still scared. But the point is that when you run away from money, you just don't have the money right now. Eventually, you're assuming you're going to get the money. So therefore, we say right now, you know, you're not so worried about somebody catching you. Whereas the person who's running for their lives is very worried someone's going to see him, and that's the Rashbam, and he says he's worried for his life that someone's going to see him, and therefore he's not going to protest because people will find him. Right? It's like when you play hide and seek, if you make a noise, someone's going to find you. So likewise, if you protest, somehow word will get back. Oh, how'd you hear? Where is he? Let's go find him. Now I'll be able to spot him. The Rambam has a different nusach, and he has a different way of wording it. He says it's because he's mitasek b'nafsho. And this goes back to something we discussed earlier, like with the Resh Galuta, one of the reasons we gave there was that they don't protest because they're too busy with other things. So here's another good example of someone who's too busy with things that he's not going to protest because he's so busy worrying about saving himself that he's certainly not going to bother protesting, but it doesn't mean that he doesn't own it. So therefore, his lack of protest is not a relevant factor. I thought the Rambam makes a lot of sense. This, I think in general, the thinking about what's going on in a person's mind and how bothered someone is by various things, which doesn't allow them to free themselves up to deal with other things, is something we all experience in our daily lives, and I think is an interesting point. Okay. Finally, we're going to get to now, what is the nusach of what you have to say in order for it to count as a protest? Hechi dami mecha'a. Amar zvid, planya gazlanahu lo havi mecha'a. Planya gazlanahu din nakit le la'are begazlanuta ulamachar tavana lebedina havi mecha'a. So now we have two versions. One counts, one doesn't. If you say, this guy is a robber, that doesn't count. So someone's living in your land and you say this guy's a robber, it doesn't count. What's the assumption? The assumption is that maybe he bought the land from you, but he didn't yet fully pay you. And therefore you're calling him a gazlan because he owes you money. Okay? And therefore it's not an indicator that, let's say I'm the person, again, we said there's two aspects of the protest. One is for the owner of the property, one is for the possessor to hear. If I'm possessing the land and I hear this, I can just assume it's just because I haven't paid him in full, and I'll pay him in full, and it doesn't mean that, what, I have to keep my shtar for longer than the 3-year period because someone is casting doubt on my ownership of the land.
Does it mean that it's just too vague overall? It's not specific enough?
It could be it's vague. It could be it's vague. Right. The point is, like many things we've seen in halacha, is the question is, can it be interpreted in different ways? And this, the assumption is, can be interpreted in different ways. But if somebody says someone is a gazlan because he took my land through theft, so then it's quite clear. And tomorrow I'm taking him to court. Okay? There's a whole argument, because if you notice, this has two things up on the other one. It says two added statements. So there's obviously, like we know from many things, there's a machloket among the mafreshim, whether you actually have to say the words ulamachar tavana lebedina. And if you didn't say that, then it doesn't count as a protest. Or if you didn't say those words, would it count anyway? Because the key words are, he took my land, begazlanuta. And what if you didn't say the words, plani gazlanahu? Let's say you just said, ploni took my land, begazlanuta. Would that work? Okay, so this is obviously a very difficult halacha, because if you don't actually know the halachot, you're not going to know exactly how to word it. And maybe you're going to word it in the wrong way, and then obviously you might lose out. So again, I assume that it doesn't necessarily have to be exactly these words. If there were a case where someone gave an indication of the, you know, again, it would be a debate among the commentaries whether you need to say that the person is a gazlan or just that he took your land begazlanuta, and whether you have to say I'm taking him to court or you don't have to say I'm taking him to court. So depending on how you paskin, right, it might affect what kind of a statement you would say. So this is again like if we talked about, let's say with amigo, you know, here you'd have to know the halacha in order to do this right. Amigo works on the basis that you don't really know the halacha, otherwise you play with the halacha. So there's always a bit of a discrepancy about what the expectation of the average person. Do they know the halacha or do they not know the halacha? And therefore, how will it affect them in their dealings with others?
It also sounds rather harsh. I mean, it seems like you should be able to just say, it's my land, I own it, I can prove it. Like, mm-hmm. Why do you have to call the person a thief? Maybe it's a misunderstanding. Maybe it was just land that was vacant and nobody, you know.
Right. So the question is also, what if you say you took my land? Would that be enough, or do you have to actually use the term big gazlanuta?
Right.
Because you took my land could mean, I think, well, the reason you really have to say begaz lanuta is exactly what I said in the beginning. We're concerned that maybe he took your land and didn't pay you in full. He bought the land, but didn't pay you. Now, if somebody takes the land and doesn't pay you in full, you wouldn't say he took my land begaz lanuta. You might call him a gazlan, but you wouldn't say he took my land begaz lanuta. And that's why if you might say you took my land and didn't fully pay me, but that wouldn't create this situation. That wouldn't be called a protest. Exactly. It's all, exactly. So you have to, this just reminds me of nidarim and all those things where your wording is so critical. How you word things and what you mean by what you say is very important. So when we have a halacha where it's all based on your protesting, so then we have to have it clear and make sense that the Gemara is going to get to this section after all this time. We're talking about protesting. Well, what exactly has to be the context of your protest? Because if someone could explain it some other way, well, then, you know, that's
not very effective.
Then it wasn't effective, exactly. So again, it's always a matter of which side you err on. In this case, you're going to have to err on the side of making sure you were totally clear. Otherwise, the person could claim, well, I didn't know you were protesting. I just assumed I bought the land from you. I hadn't fully paid you, and that's why. So as long as you give the person an out to say that, since, again, it has two purposes. So if this is the purpose is for the possessor, so you have to be very clear.
Yeah. Turn it off, but I have two.